Welcome to episode 4 of Life Seeds. I'm super excited about today's episode because we're going to meet Michael Perry, aka Mr. Plant Geek, from the UK. I've been following him on Twitter for several years, Amanda. This guy has got it going on in terms of his passion. And also, I just like his perspective sometimes on gardening overall. He also has a lot of life lessons, I think, too, that we're going to learn for today. So, Michael Perry, aka Mr. Plant Geek.
Yay! Hey,
I wonder what life lessons you've picked up from me. That worries me a bit.
You're like, how vulnerable have I been online?
Yeah, what have I done?
I love your journey. You know, I was doing some reading and I see that, you know, your passion for gardening was brought on to you by your grandparents in a greenhouse and went on to your parents' garden itself. And then at a young age, you started a plant business as well. And you were a little afraid to let your friends know about that business.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, when you're a kid in those days, like, it wasn't cool to like plants, you know. Now we see kids, teenagers, all sorts of demographic are interested in houseplants, outdoor plants, grow your own. But it wasn't like that when I was young. And it's kind of like you would, I don't know, people would kind of like take the mick or kind of like think you were feminine if you were into plants. So it was definitely something that I always wanted to keep secret. So, yeah, I was having wonderful evenings and weekends just kind of, you know, growing my stuff, kind of enjoying my plants. But I never told anybody about it. And the business you mentioned is my herb nursery, the online herb nursery that I set up maybe like 12 years old.
It's amazing.
20 orders. But yeah, I was just, I guess I always loved plants, but I always liked money as well.
everything green. Yeah. So speaking to that a little bit, Michael, as well, I mean, your parents, so influential doing their own gardening thing. Can you tell us a little bit about mom and dad?
Well, do you know what? It's almost my grandparents that got me into gardening because, you know, when you're young, you tend to spend a bit more time with your grandparents and you're often taken there. They babysit you, etc. So even though my dad had a small veg patch, it was really most of my learning came from my grandma. And, you know, some of my earliest memories are just doing things in the garden with her and just... I was soon, you know, growing the same stuff that she did in my parents' garden. So I almost kind of started to take over their space. But it was really my grandparents where it all came from. And they were, they weren't trained professionally, but they were working in plants. They were selling plants at the end of the driveway, local markets. So they were kind of completely enveloped in it. And also spending lots of time at flower shows as well. In those days, we used to have flower shows where... there was children's classes, so there would be like build a garden on a plate. Actually, I happen to have just made a how-to video with gardens on a plate. Yeah. So you can see one for real. Talk about that for timing. Look at that.
I'll get a picture if you guys are listening to the podcast, not watching the YouTube. I'll throw a picture on our Instagram so you can see.
Yeah, so I was starting to do things like that and kind of different baking and stuff. So yeah, it was really, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents and they're the ones that I'm really thankful for getting me into plants, really. Yeah.
And that kind of took you to win a contest with Thompson and Morgan as well. Mm. It kind of brought you right into that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was at school. I wasn't very good at thinking ahead. And in those days, you know, people saw horticulture as the kind of, like the booby prize, like the thing you did if you couldn't do anything else, which kind of, I don't know, just felt a bit tragic. And hopefully the attitude's a bit different these days. But yeah, so I guess I wanted to work with plants. The most obvious thing to the careers advisor was go to horticultural college. So I did that for 2 years. It was cool, but it was very general. It was, you know, a lot of stuff that I wasn't interested in or good at, like driving a tractor or, you know, sports turf. But obviously there was plant identification, biology side of stuff, which I was kind of, you know, most keen on. So yeah, again, towards the end of the course, I wasn't planning ahead very well. And there was a competition in the local newspaper to design a garden at Thompson & Morgan. And Thompson & Morgan is the biggest UK mail order plant company in the UK, which just so happened to be based in my hometown as well. And so I entered the competition and you needed to design a garden that would be built there. And And I designed a garden full of plants that were raised in Suffolk, which is the county that I'm from in the UK. And so I kind of, I guess I showed initiative, kind of marketing awareness, and I won the competition. And I remember I wrote into the company a couple of weeks after and said, hey, remember me? Do you want to give me a job? In not so many words. And yeah, and I was brought in for an interview, and then I became the apprentice to what was then the horticultural manager. And so I started then going out looking for new plants. I remember one of my first escapades was to fly to Scotland to collect a petunia with star-shaped petals, really unique. Wow. So I was straight into brand new plants and developing plants from 18 years old, really, which is such a brilliant break that I had there with Thompson Morgan.
So amazing. So everyone listening right now, you can tell we're not talking to a Canadian. We're talking across the pond all the way to the UK. So we're so thankful that you made the time change for us. Speaking to a little bit of the life and garden side of things, it sounds like that was a big shift for you. It sounds like that was such a big opportunity, but you took a risk on yourself by sending that email and saying, hey, yeah, remember me? I'm good enough for this. Let's do something together. What advice would you kind of give to someone else who is so vastly interested in something like this, but they just don't see that opportunity in front of them?
Well, do you know what? First of all, I was never, even when I was younger, I wasn't afraid to approach people and ask them things and kind of, I guess sending a letter is like easy as well, because you get a reply, you don't get a reply. It's not the same as phoning someone up, I guess. But yeah, so I've always been quite, even now, you know, if I want to work with someone, I'll go straight up to them in a Twitter direct message or Instagram, or I just think, what's the worst that can happen? They'll say no. So I would say, yeah, just, I would encourage people just to network. I mean, these days, you know, they've got so many more tools than we had. Like when I was, you know, a 12-year-old kid, enjoying plants, growing my own herbs in the garden, there was nobody I could reach out to, and there was no way I could find those people to reach out to. But now you just need to follow a hashtag on Instagram, or you go on a gardening group on Facebook, and you can connect with people so much. So like anybody that wants to work in plants, connecting is easy. Everything's out there. You just need to push yourself and get it done. But it's not just online, obviously offline counts as well, because, you know, I always have a bugbear that someone should be able to have the same confidence offline than they would online. So yeah, so it's also about then getting out to gardens, kind of meeting like-minded individuals, perhaps a few kind of internet meetups, you know, and then you've got people that are into the same stuff as you do. So it's hopefully not as solitary as horticulture used to be, you know?
Mm-hmm. I always say that you got to throw a lot of mud. And if you throw a lot of mud, something eventually sticks. Yeah. So sometimes the first won't stick, but you got to throw that shovel and keep on kind of digging. Another question that I had, you know, with Thompson and Morgan, you took a break as well. There was a period of time where you decided, you know, I need to get away, and you went to Australia. And why did you decide at that time? Because you had a great job, you were young. Why did you decide at that time it's time for a break?
I don't know, actually. I can't remember.
We're digging deep. We're digging deep.
Yeah. You really did your research. I like it. I don't know. I just think it was a discussion with my partner at the time. And we were kind of like, oh, it would be cool to go and travel and blah, blah. And sometimes with that, there's never the right time. And it's something that's easy to put off. So it wasn't anything that was not necessarily right with my role, I guess. I'd done a few years, done a lot of different things. I think I was quite a different person at that stage as well. Like I wasn't necessarily so confident. So I wasn't doing the TV work or any of the kind of media stuff at that stage. So yeah, so it just felt right at the time. Obviously it was a bit of a risk because, you know, technically I was handing my notice in, but I think I was too value. I didn't envisage this. I didn't plan it, but I was obviously valuable to them and they decided to keep me on like a retainer. So then I was able to then go back when I then got back after almost a year of traveling, indeed, Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, US as well. And then coming back, I think I started working on the plant side of the business, and kind of my boss then was quite a pushy guy, but in a really great way, because so many times I would be like, oh no, I can't do that, doesn't it? And he would be like, you can, and that's why now I push myself to do stuff, because feeling that fear is, it's not that bad. And the feeling you get afterwards, the euphoria of knowing that you were scared, but you did it, is just brilliant and addictive as well.
I love that, because I can relate so much to taking that risk. After university, I was in this kind of tough relationship. At the time, friends couldn't go with me, and I decided to solo travel Australia as well.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I had a friend, one of my best friends moved to Brisbane. So I flew down to Sydney. He just met there so I could get my bearings, basically like body clock and such. And then he was like, okay, you're off, go do your own thing. And I found that I just learned so much from taking that risk. Mm. Like, there were moments in life where, you probably had this too. You were traveling with a partner at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably had this too, where you met people maybe in hostels and you had one interaction. And at the end of that interaction, it was like, I hope you have a really nice life. So I just remember those small moments and just how impactful that was on my life. From your own travel experience, it sounds like you gained confidence, and maybe that even helped you get into the TV side and saying yes to new opportunities. Can you kind of speak to taking that detour in life?
Yeah, I guess it was, yeah, it was kind of like a rebirth, really. And I'd been out and I'd seen the world. And even now, I get infused by being in different places, experiencing different cultures, meeting different people. So kind of, yeah, that really paid off. And yeah, it's interesting to think, like, I wonder if I had developed the career that I did if I hadn't had the break in the middle. You know, I might still be middling around doing the same stuff that I was when I was younger if I hadn't have had that kind of refresh. So yeah, but also I think if I'd had a different boss, I think that I might not have been, you know, having the same success as well, because, you know, he was quite hard, but he was also encouraging as well, which really helped. And I even see now, like, a lot of the ways that he was able to think in a quite a reactive way, you know, because something I've learned is you can't always plan everything. And sometimes you'll have a plan and you'll stick to it and it's very rigid, but that doesn't actually help you, because what if something changed on the way? You need to be able to react and change and kind of be able to not just think on your feet, but talk on your feet as well. So I kind of learned a lot of those different skills, and they're ones that help you in the media, aren't they?
And, you know, some people watching this right now or listening will say, you know, he was lucky. He was lucky. He got all this. But I always say, in order to be lucky, you have to be good. You can be lucky. You can open the door, but then you got to prove yourself thereafter. And you got to be willing to take the risk. I've had lots of luck in my life, being at the right place at the right time that elevated even my TV career. But I also took the chance, and I made a lot of mistakes, lot of mistakes along the way. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think same. Can't think of any necessarily, but I think, you know, it wasn't always easy. There was always times when it was kind of, you know, a bit more of a struggle and you kind of really didn't think you could do it. But like, everything always turns out okay at the end. And like I said, the addictive nature of that euphoria of being scared but doing it anyway, it was just too good to miss, really. And I think I've just really got used to that over the years. And even now, you know, if someone asks me something that's completely left field or off the wall, I'll always say yes. You know, I just say yes to everything, because you don't know how interesting it's going to be. You don't know what it will lead you to. And why say no? You know, I've got time to, I can always fit stuff in. Do you know what I mean? And and there's one other thing which kind of sort of links into that, which I think I've always found that what has almost helped me in my career is something really simple, which is just kind of being reliable and doing what you say you'll do and turning up on time and delivering what you're going to deliver on time as well. And that sounds really super basic, but that's where a lot of people go wrong. And that kind of gives me the edge, because people can really depend on me. You know, they know that I'm going to come up with the goods. I'm quite lucky by being quite creative and I can think of a lot of different ideas on the spot. But, you know, at the bottom of it all, I've got that reliability. And, you know, I may have the skills, but not be reliable. And then I wouldn't necessarily be getting the jobs that I do. So it seems simple, and a lot of people miss the ball on it, though.
I love the reliability thing and speaking to the consistency, because I think that's just such a big note in slow growth. We oftentimes in life will just see the end product. Like we're like, Michael Perry, he's got this podcast. He's doing all these lectures around the world. Like that's it. That's the thing. But they just don't see the fertilization, the watering, the buds that need to happen like along the way. As for slow growth and where you are now, like what is your most exciting thing that you're doing right now that really just draws your passion in every day?
Yeah, okay. I'll take a minute to think about that, but I just want to kind of go back on something you just said actually, because it's weird when someone would look upon my career and they'd be like, oh, you know, Michael's really arrived. He's kind of like very successful. He's doing this, this, and this. But I don't like to see things that way. I think a lot of people kind of, they're working towards some like ultimate. Yeah. And if you do that, then you kind of get distracted from the here and now, and you don't enjoy the here and now. And then you're always aiming forward to kind of be like, oh, I want to do this or I want to do that. And I won't feel right until I've done it. I think that's kind of really awful and misleading, because I enjoy everything I do. And I've got no kind of demands on myself of like in 5 years, I'll have a TV program, or in 10 years, I'll be doing this, because I think it's really silly and unsustainable. And all that will happen is, by cruel twist of fate, perhaps I don't have a TV program in 5 years, then I'll be hard on myself and forget all the cool things that I did in the last 5 years. So yeah, I kind of really have a big bugbear about that as well. So not just being on time, but also that.
Good. Social media makes it tougher too with numbers. Like social media, people are like, I won't be happy till I have 10K, 50K. Yeah, and it's like, you can't even control that.
I know. It's really, really strange. And like, just be happy in the here and now and see what you've got. And yeah. So anyway, you asked me about cool new projects. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah. Like the thing that's like, oh yeah, I can't wait because I get to do this today.
Yeah. I don't know. I really enjoy everything. You know, I do a lot of work with QVC in the UK. So we put together really interesting shows. We kind of try and make them a little bit more kind of educational rather than hard sell, which I'm pleased to be kind of behind. I do various work with a Channel 4 program in the UK where we actually filmed a really cool video on new, cool, different houseplants, because I was sick of seeing all the same houseplants everywhere. So I was kind of like, we have to do this. So I'm very excited about that coming out as well. But then there's so many projects swimming around. You know, we've got obviously the plant-based podcast. I'm always kind of in the back of my head ready to release a Plant Geeks podcast. You know, so there's so many different things bubbling away. And some of that has happened kind of, you know, during this pandemic is I'm getting so many more bookings for like online work. So seminars kind of, you know, even with places all around the world. And this is work that didn't exist before because, you know, people were traveling was the only option. Like if you did a virtual seminar, people would be like, what? You want to do that? That's crazy. So I've done some great stuff. And in a couple of weeks, I'm doing one for a big multinational bank as well. And we're doing all sorts of different, we'll do weird and wacky plant show. We'll talk about a kind of weird flavors where everyone's being sent a miracle berry so they can get that experience as well. So a lot of cool stuff has happened in the last 12 months, which is kind of ironic when you think of all the bad stuff that's happened, but also there's so much positive that came out of it. And of course, people love plants now.
Sounds like someone else I know, Frankie. This sounds like a carbon copy. Oh my God.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, here in Canada, I'm doing work for a multinational bank, doing some virtual classes for them, helping them benefit their office space at home to make them feel a little bit better. Virtual talks all over. So it's, you know, I'm just excited. I'm really excited that people are valuing plants and that right now that people see the benefit of plants. They actually think they're cool because I've always thought they're cool. I've always thought there's a lesson to learn. There's always something remarkable. They make me feel good. But you know, I can be challenged in gardening. If I want to challenge myself, I can challenge myself. If I want to take it easy, I pick some easy stuff and I actually can go easy on it. It depends on what I feel for that year. And that's what I love about gardening. And what do you love about it, Michael? What, like Mr. Planky? What is the
geek
thing
out
about? Geek out for me right now. Tell me, are you like a food grower? Are you an indoor plant collector? are you a little, I'm a little bit of everything. That's me. Yeah. I'm a little bit of everything.
I'd say, yeah, I'm a little bit of everything. Probably I've got areas where my skills are obviously stronger. So, you know, you couldn't ask me that much about trees, for example. That's not one of my specialist areas, but I would say weird and wacky plants, first of all. So strange plants, you know, largest flower in the world, smallest flowering plant in the world, smelliest plant, darkest plant, you know, and I've kind of built up different kind of monikers for a lot of different plants as well, which then again sets it apart, makes it interesting. And at the bottom of everything, you know, I want to inspire people to love plants when they have no knowledge of plants at all. And I never want to be kind of snobbish or not be inclusive, because, you know, you can get that a lot in horticulture. And I always want to kind of, you know, I don't care if you call a geranium or a pelargonium. It really doesn't matter. Just grow it, you know. So I hate that that kind of snobbishness that comes with it. But what was I talking about there? Sorry, I got so into plants. What do I love about plants? Oh, my specialist area.
What do I love about gardening? What's right. Your thing right now that you're
I love that phrase also. Sorry, I just got so into it. I'm like, yeah, yes, that's it.
Okay, right, I'm back to it. So weird and wacky plants would be one of them. Another one, which I kind of like, but I like it more because it gets people's attention. And I'm all about getting people's attention, but from lots of different demographics. So I never want to appeal to the same people that that watch gardening programs that have been gardening for 30 years. That's not kind of what I'm there for. So Rude Botany, which is a brand that I've got, it's basically all the rude plant names or plants that look rude. And people really love that sort of stuff. And it's great to have a giggle. And of course, no one can be offended because it's just botany. But then kind of, I'd also say my real specialty is obviously new plants and new concepts, because that was my role predominantly at Thompson & Morgan. So I introduced hundreds of brand new plants and was behind plants such as the egg and chips plant or the marketing behind blue verbascum. Also kind of rebranding plants. And that's what kind of really excites me, to look at a plant and think, how can I promote that in a different way that pricks up, you know, a newer customer's ears or something. So, you know, we invented, as it were, like climbing petunias, which were basically ground cover petunias that we made grow upwards in a frame. So suddenly you've got a brand new plant. So it wasn't always about brand new items, but it was about reimagining what you already knew. And I always want to push the boundaries. So I've done some like kind of multi-planted houseplant containers, because nobody ever does that, do they? We make patio pots for outside with petunias, geraniums all mixed up, but we don't do it inside. And perhaps we can, if we use the right plants that are happy together. So I'll be doing that, or I'll be using some indoor plant in an outdoor setting. We did a live QVC show with dahlias last weekend, and they were forced, so they're very out of season. And I've just put one in my hallway as a houseplant. Let's see how a dahlia performs as a houseplant, you know? So I'm always kind of pushing these boundaries. And I am lucky to be blessed with a lot of samples, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff left over from different TV programs and all of this. So then I like to just kind of have a play with it and see if I can learn something new or inspire people to just be a bit different with their plants as well. More thing before I leave. There's also a style of planting that I have done at Niagara Parks, actually, which is called Barakura. And this kind of originates from a garden in Japan, an English garden that I've worked with for about 5 years now, doing various seminars and workshops with their students. They've got a little gardening school there. And they plant containers in a style that is, if you were a traditional horticulturist in the UK, you would not approve, because they basically put a lot of plants in a container, and these will be all different plants. So it could be grasses, it could be ferns, it could be a small shrub, annuals, and they shoehorn them in to give an instant display. And this is just like flower arranging, but with living plants. And the containers are not designed to look good for 6 months. They're designed to look good for, you know, 4 weeks tops. But it really means you can break the rules. You can just relax the rules and actually put what you want to create, and the creativity that we get coming out of that. And I've had a great few years doing that in Japan. And I'm now starting to do some of those demos you know, not only for seminars, but in some real life workshops at a flower farm near here. So it's kind of, that style is really hopefully going to catch on in the next few years, because it's just, it's about just relaxing with plants. And, you know, we don't need to follow all the rules, or, you know, I don't know. I just love
there's
it.
There's no rules. There's no rules in nature too. And even for that, if you're going to jam a bunch in a container, you can enjoy it for 4 weeks of time, like a bottle of wine. And then you can tear them apart and pop them in the garden in different
spots. Yeah. But a lot of people, when they grow, I don't know what it's like there, but when they grow containers like in the UK, you know, they'll have a 12-inch patio container and they'll plant, say, 5 begonias, like each 6 inches apart, purely because the book says you need to plant them 6 inches apart. But kind of what about if I want a quicker display, or I want a more instant display, or I just want to squash them in and then replant them? It's like, why not, really? You know,
one of my favorite hacks that I've learned from Frankie over the years is he'll take a hanging basket that's already like beautifully flourished, cut it up, and then put it in the pot and make the display. And I'm like, that's brilliant, because dang, it's done. It's brilliant. Yeah,
that's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
Because you can keep moving stuff and changing it. And, you know, you could even keep the stuff in their pots. If there's stuff that you know you want to take out, you know, why not plant in these different ways? Not in these different ways that the books don't tell you how to do it.
But, and I'll tell you a little hack too that we do at the, as well, my family are greenhouse growers. And so sometimes they always ask us, you know, if we have a canna in the center and they're like, how did you get the canna lily to be so big and all the other plant materials at a different stage? So all we do is we put a pot in the center as a spot for it. We grow around it to a certain stage, and then we take our 6-inch cannas that are nice and large, and we pop them in the center, and they look amazing. And they're like, how did somebody grow that? Well, it's not like we grew it all there at one time. We play tricks. Like, that's growers. We're playing tricks.
Yeah.
We're playing with nature to make it fun. Yeah.
But I think it's become a little bit kind of, I don't know, people are not showing that stuff, or like the traditional press don't approve of that sort of tricks and stuff. But it's like, this is what makes it fun, you know, and it's, no one's misleading anybody. It's just kind of different ways of promoting stuff, you know? So.
Speaking to some of those faves in the house, because behind me, classic pothos. We got a snake plant here, like very classic house plant for beginners. What are some,
I might ask you to change those up a bit.
Yes, okay, please.
Sorry.
There's a lot going on. We got a little ZZ here. But okay, so this is the perfect question then, because this is going to help me selfishly. What are 3 to 5, if you can come up with them, top house plants that you think we should be looking into right now to really switch things up?
Now you ask me. I'm looking around. I'm hoping that anything I talk to you, I'm going to be able to grab and show you as well.
If it takes a minute, I can edit. No worries.
So first of all, I would say something that really gets overlooked, and I want to kind of change this as much as I can, is flowering houseplants. You know, we kind of got a bit snobbish about orchids in the last few years, but I'm going to show you a couple of really cool orchids, and it kind of changed how you think about things. I'm not sure if the color will necessarily come through on camera, but orchids are now being sold with really unique colors, kind of almost as named varieties. And this one's called Red Asian. And the color of these flowers is just, it's amazing. It's kind of like a salmon pink, and it's really unique. And, you know, you shouldn't overlook orchids, because there's a lot of lovely premium varieties that have got these cool colors. And there's a range of Phalaenopsis now that have fragrance as well. And that's, you know, I'm always super interested in, you know, color breaks, or, you know, breaks in breeding in plants. And this is some of your first fragrant Phalaenopsis, which adds a whole extra dimension to what you're talking about here. So that counts as one thing. Okay. The orchids.
Okay. And I got to add something to that as well.
Yeah.
The word orchid, do you ever know where the name orchid is derived from?
Ooh, I do, but I've forgotten.
It's actually derived from the same word that means testicle.
Yes, I think I did know that.
Yeah, so.
So you could have Frankie testicles featured on Rude Botany if you'd like. He's free anytime.
So what I've got here is something really simple, and something that we're starting to use as an outdoor plant, and this is coleus. The name keeps changing. It might be Solanus stamen, it might be Plectranthus, but basically Coleus to us. And this is a great plant. And my grandma used to grow it. And when you look at, you know, foliage plants, and foliage plants are all, you know, we're mad about them for indoors, as, you know, all these jungalows and all the influences. But look at Coleus, you know, it's an amazing plant. And it's really fun to grow from seed as well. And I think for people to grow houseplants from seed is another, you know, extra dimension to it all. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Coleus. What else have I got here? This, I think stuff like this is really fun. Do you know what this is?
An air plant?
Not quite. No, it's a resurrection plant.
And this is a plant that I'm not familiar.
Yeah. So this grows native in the desert in Mexico, in the Chihuahua desert. And what it does, it basically dries up during the dry season. And then when the rain comes, it literally opens up. And this will open up within just an hour and becomes this big, almost like green chrysanthemum-like plant. It's amazing. And of course, that's going to be the easiest houseplant you ever look after because, you know, you only need to remember to water it every so often, every few years or something.
Oh, I love the name too.
Definitely. I might need to pop off just to bring you another. Oh, there's one here. Here we go. Now, this is a houseplant you're never going to kill. Have you seen these?
Do we put that?
It looks like an aquatic, like fern or something like that.
Kind of. They're actually liquid terrariums. So these are plants that are, they're basically dried and they're suspended in oil. And these have been made in Korea by a company called Slow Pharmacy. And there's probably about 10 different designs. And one of them that you can get, not this one, but one that you can get is a maidenhair fern. And of course, we know that's the hardest houseplant to grow. But of course, this, that's never going to die. It never fades. You never need to top it up. You can even have it in dark rooms as well.
So yeah, it actually looks like a piece of art almost. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I know. Pretty cool. So big fan of those. I have to show you this one for fun.
Oh, I love it. Which way to the beach?
For some reason, I don't know. I always, like, my brain just goes really left field on stuff. And I was asked to do some work with a wine company, a sustainable wine company. And from the moment I had the call with the woman, I said, all I could think about in my head was, let's build a garden in a wine glass. Let's just do it. And so that's what I did. And so I've been filming these videos and you've got, this one works really well because look, Venus flytrap in a wine glass. Because of course that will enjoy the boggy conditions. So of course you do need to be careful with drainage. And at the end of the day, this is just a bit of fun. You don't want this to last for years. Do you know what I mean? You're just having fun, perhaps with your kids, your family, and building, like, you know, really fun little succulent gardens. So it's just really cool. And so I like being able to bend the rules in that way, really.
You know, the other thing that I know you like to do too is reading about wabi-sabi, the Japanese technique of gardening. And that's just really like, just let it be free.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of, you know, it's all about letting nature kind of shape man-made objects. So, you know, leaving moss on the path, you know, leaving seed heads to develop, you know, to help nature, but also kind of help yourself relax as well, because you don't have to be as pristine about your garden and such. So, yeah, I love the style of wabi-sabi. And it's really funny, like, having traveled to Japan a lot, the style of garden you expect there and the style of garden you see are quite far removed. You know, I guess it's like you come to England, you don't see an English garden in every neighborhood. You know, it doesn't work like that. But kind of, I see you raise your eyebrows like you're really shocked. It's really not. Everybody has an English country garden. Don't believe it. And so in Japan, you know, you've got the same. Not everywhere is a Zen gravel garden. You know, you have got slightly more relaxed vibes there as well. And, you know, people just appreciating nature and how it's shaping, you know, their garden and kind of letting it be to some degree. You know, it's kind of controlled relaxation, I would say.
Traveling so much and seeing so many different places, what has been a garden or an area that's really taken your breath away?
Oh, everywhere's so different. You know what I mean? What I love is when I'm somewhere and I see a plant that I've only seen in books or on the internet before. The time you first see a plant that you've only seen in that format before, it's always amazing. And so, you know, seeing the largest seed in the world in the Seychelles was incredible, or in Borneo, seeing the largest flower in the world. So kind of ticking off all of those kind of weird and wacky plants is always really fun. But I would say I learn stuff from every region that I'm in, you know, and yeah, that's what makes it interesting. And I kind of try and find out about different concepts. You kind of, you soon get a feel when you're somewhere as well, because you kind of, you know, go around a neighborhood, you see what people usually grow, kind of what's in season in the garden center. So I just love learning all about that. And if there's stuff that I can then bring back to, you know, UK audiences, then I do so.
Mm. Which is great. Those plant finds are great. I have another question for you from a personal level. So when it comes to designing containers or designing gardens, you know, I have a lot of fun and I can usually do other people's gardens really quite easily, very quickly and easily. When it comes to my own garden, sometimes I stumble because I know all the options. And I think one of the hardest gardens for me to design has always been my own. And I don't know if you can relate to that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I just, I bought a house last year and it's got a very small garden. It was, it's not, you know, I'd rather be in the countryside at some point, but it was good for now. I'm kind of moving house in a pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But it's quite a small urban space. So I was kind of like, oh, what do I do with it? And quite probably quite stupidly, I invested in it. Like I probably should have left it as it was because it was okay. But it's like, I just had this vision in my head of how I wanted it to look. And I don't think I relate to the same feeling, to be honest, because I guess I'd seen Instagram and all different social media platforms for a few years and kind of been gently kind of collecting all these ideas subconsciously in my head of kind of like things that I liked and what I wanted it to look like. So when I moved into this house, it was just like I, you know, called some contractors and kind of like we put a design together for the garden, which was kind of the one that was stuck in my head from the beginning. So it's polished concrete rather than lawn, which is quite controversial. Right. And then kind of planting that kind of billows out and kind of like, you know, folds over onto the polished concrete with a nice seating area, dark wood decking as well, and little kind of gullies for the plants as well. So you're then softening all of that concrete. So, and yeah, it's really cool. And it's weird because it was my vision for a long time. And my worry is when I get another garden that, like, I hope I move on and have a different vision. Otherwise, I'll just be building the same garden everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what makes it easy.
I think it will. Yeah.
It's like getting a garden out of a box. A template.
Yeah, I just moved to a smaller property from a larger property.
Yeah.
Due to a separation. So, you know, I'm in a smaller property right now, smaller urban center. I actually have polished concrete that the previous owner had. Yeah. Stamped concrete, polished concrete here is really quite popular. So the modern lines, very much, it's very almost California is kind of that polished concrete. Very popular here, but it depends on what areas of Canada you go to. The difference in terms of garden style is really defined by really just the amount of demographic that you have. So you'll find something in Vancouver totally different than Toronto. And in Toronto, you'll find a little bit of everything because we're so diverse with culture. So you'll find Asian gardens. You'll find other gardens that are like a country garden. You'll find a very wild and whimsical. And then you'll find very contemporary, very tight lines, very green and white. Green and white is probably the biggest color trend right now in Canada.
Okay. That, to me, that is very Dutch style. You know, Dutch gardens have lots of neat kind of areas and they kind of keep it very simple and basic with, you know, usually you've got hydrangea Annabelle in the color palette, you know, green, you know, Pachysandra and all different things giving that sort of texture. So that's, yeah, that's kind of like, reminds me of a lot of Dutch gardens. That does.
I think my last question would basically just be about your podcast. You've been doing that for a bit. It sounds really cool. I'm excited to dive in to listen to a couple of episodes. If you guys don't know, he has a podcast called, oh shoot, I had it written right here and it's in my head.
Plant-based podcast.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm like, oh God, where is it? So many notes. Have you been loving it? What's like the biggest takeaway that you've had from doing this podcast?
Do you know what? We always wanted it to be really broad about plants. So that's kind of, it's called plant-based which is quite a misleading name, but because it's not just about plant-based food or plant-based diets, it's about plant-based, as in being obsessed with plants, you know. So yeah, we've got to speak to some amazing people, and right down from, you know, plant-based foods, vegetables, fruit, to garments, you know, materials, drinks, but also then plants, and talking to nursery growers and breeders and developers. And so, yeah, it's just everything about plants, and it's just really, it's really fun. I think I work really nicely with my co-presenter, and we kind of, we're almost like brother and sister in a way. We kind of like just like have a bit of banter. We've got a great kind of work ethic, and we've got a lovely balance between kind of being relaxed, but also imparting knowledge and like getting knowledge from our interviewees as well. But I think for both of us, we kind of really object to that kind of stuffiness that we have in some areas of horticulture. And so we're kind of very like-minded when it comes to that. And so, yeah, we're just always trying to break down that stuffiness and kind of just let people enjoy being with plants. You know, they don't have to follow all the rules or this or that. You can see I've got a real problem with rules, can't you?
Yeah, I know. Actually, my partner, Scotty, always says we make the rules. And so yeah, there'll be sometimes in life where, I mean, say you, something so simple, say you forget the laundry and the wash starts to smell like mildew. He's like, just rewash it. We make the rules. It's not a big deal. It's fine.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I think that's because I was taught to always be reactive. So yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I love it. And we've loved having these conversations. Yeah. Sorry, Frank. Yeah.
And I was going to say to you, when you break the rules, that's called innovation. Yeah. That's really what innovation is. If you want to make change, you have to have the risk to break the rules. Yeah. And sometimes you got to go outside the box, and sometimes it works. I've never had a fear of failure, never, ever. And sometimes I'll laugh at myself. I'll be like, oh my God, you tried to do that, but whatever.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Definitely. Just have a go, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And, you know, thankfully I'm blessed with, you know, a creative energy and a creative mind. You know, it might not be so easy if I didn't have that. So yeah, no, I'm really thankful. But of course, as I said at the beginning, it's also about working hard, being reliable, you know, doing what you say you're going to do, which, like I said, sounds simple, but, you know, a lot of people can't do it.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody wants to find out more about you, how would they do that? Of course, you're on Twitter, you're on Instagram. What's the easiest way? And then you have your website, which is MrPlantGeek.com.
Yeah, probably the easiest way, the hub for everything is the website, MrPlantGeek.com, which has then got all the social media links on. It'll also link you through to the plant-based podcast and all the different brands, really. So, yeah, I'm really proud of the website, and it's really developed a lot over the last year, and kind of, you know, pandemic has really given a lot more traffic, and we've got some really cool articles on there, and it's a nice, like, slow read as well. And you should look up, if you haven't already, WTF gardening and see what that's all about.
I will. I know exactly what that would be about. Yeah. And my other question is, some of those cool t-shirts, do you ship them to Canada?
Yeah. Everything is shipped worldwide. Everything is digital print. So it's just printed directly and then sent across to where it needs to be. So I don't have stock in a cupboard here somewhere. So yeah, they're available. You've got Rude Botany, you've got Plant Geek, you've got all sorts of designs there. You've even got please don't ask me why your plant died. You know, when you go to like a party or drinks party or some summer event, someone's always going to find out that you work with plants and ask you why their plant died.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, give me a day off. It's not that I don't want to help you, you know. And also, we can never know why someone's plant died. There's so many variables, and they're probably going to tell you that they grew it perfectly, whatever.
Frankie, well, you get that from both sides, being a weather person too. People being like, oh, is it going to be nice on my wedding? And you're like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird,
isn't it? The three famous things I get asked is, you know, what's the weather today? What time do you get up in the morning? Because I work on a morning show. Yeah. And why did my plant die? I wanted to print those all in a t-shirt and just say, I know what you're going to ask me. But, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here today on episode 4. We learned a ton. It's always great to share passion about plants. Check them out, MrPlantGeek.com. Michael Perry, the man from across the pond that makes it every song. He makes it dive deep, and he never, ever Well, he's always really a treat. That's what I'll say. You are the treat when it comes to horticulture. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the wrap.
It's not that good, but I tried.
Frankie, he was so cool.
Amazing. You know, when it's always great to talk to somebody from across the pond, from around the world, that has a different perspective on gardening, and somebody that's just passionate and really just wants to do it, just wants to be it, wants to live with no rules, and just wants to put himself out there, kind of plants a seed and see where it goes. And that's really what Life Seeds is all about. It's about the seed of opportunity. And if you think about him, he started off with his grandparents, and then all of a sudden, you know, went into a competition, won the competition, got a job, and everything all built upon each other. It's almost like the soil that's layering up over years, and all of a sudden you have this wonderful soil that you can grow on.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I think we often just want to get to the next step. And I love how he was talking about, like, no, like, I'm appreciating the here and now, and people will see how good you are. And, you know, it'll grow no matter what, if you stay consistent. And I think that's something we can remind ourselves no matter what we're doing in life. Literally could be gardening, something as simple as just planting a seed, could be your career, could be your relationship, getting to know a friendship, things like that. Is there something that you took away from that chat that you want to try?
Well, you know what, when he looked at the resurrection plant, so I was like, well, I didn't know about that. And then when the liquid terrariums as well, you know, I'm not really seeing those around here. So it's always, this is even in my world, which is on the garden center end of my family business, I've traveled all over always looking for new trends before they happen to be a trend in this area. Yeah. So what am I going to be doing right after this podcast is looking at the resurrection plant. I'm going to be looking at the liquid terrariums. But what I took away from that is just really, I love energy in people. You can sense his energy. And what I took away, that plant people are good people. That's what I took away. It doesn't matter. We're all a little wacky and a little weird at times, but we're all good people to the core.
I love passionate, wacky people. That's like my favorite type of person. Also, one of the things
we have to add to that though, Amanda. It has to be passionate, wacky, and kind.
Oh, that's it. With the plant world, I can see how it could be so intimidating for anyone just starting, because you look up a plant that you want to see, something as simple as the snake plant. You go on and you see the longer name, Sansevieria, all this thing, and you think that you need to do it. And it's just like anyone getting a new pet, being a new mom, that you're scared to share your story because someone else is gonna critique you and be like, you're doing it the wrong way. And by him saying, you know what, there are no rules, there's no right, there's no wrong way, you gotta try it, you gotta do your own thing, that is something that I'm gonna walk away with.
Good. You know what, every one of these podcasts, we learn a little bit about something. And today we learned a lot, and it's always just fun. It's fun. That's it. And you know what? Life is like a box of plants.
A box of succulents.
You never know how they're going to grow.
You really don't. Guys, thanks so much for listening to another episode of Life Seeds, episode 4. Frankie, when you said it at the beginning, I couldn't believe we were already at episode 4. I know it's not a ton, but it feels like a milestone still. follow us along on Instagram. Keep in mind, we still have a giveaway going on there from our last episode. It would have been released by the time this episode goes live. So that's at Life Seeds Podcast on Instagram. I'm Amanda Weldon, at Below the Blonde on Instagram. And you are?
Frank Ferragini, aka Frankie Flowers, at Frank Ferragini on Instagram, Twitter, or go to Facebook at Ask Frankie Flowers. Peace out! Boom!